Nations across North Africa and the Middle East are erupting in bloodshed and revolution. Japan continues to confront its largest crisis since World War II. And America's economy, along with the economies of the world, stand on the verge of crisis. Just a few months ago, President Obama's bipartisan debt commission warned in its report, America faces staggering deficits. This coming year, for every dollar the U.S. government plans to spend, it will have to borrow 40 cents to do so. Interest on the debt could rise to nearly $1 trillion by 2020, just 8 years from now. And by 2025, our total revenue will be able to finance only four things: the interest payments on our debt, Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. Every other federal government activity, from national defense and homeland security to transportation and energy, will have to be paid for with borrowed money. Is the world stage being set for the end time events the biblical prophets predicted? Are we beginning to see a worldwide economic Armageddon? My guest today is Dr. David Jeremiah, senior pastor of Shadow Mountain Community Church in El Cajon, California, and founder and speaker of the popular radio and television ministry, Turning Point. We invite you to join us for this special edition of the John Ankerberg Show. Welcome to our program. We've got a great one for you today. My guest is Dr. David Jeremiah, senior pastor of Shadow Mountain Community Church in El Cajon, California. And you know him as the founder and the speaker on Turning Point, the popular television and radio program that's heard around the world. And folks, we're talking about his new book, The Coming Economic Armageddon. This is on the New York Times bestseller list. And today our topic is From Crisis to Consolidation. We're going into 185 countries right now that are listening to this information. And you know that there's a crisis in the European Union with Greece, Portugal, Ireland, Spain, Italy. And there's a shift going on there. The euro could be in trouble, and everybody is worried about that. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. And I think the main thing for us here in America is we know that there's this shift toward big government here in the United States. And I think, David, what we want to talk about is how crises that we're experiencing here in this country and those overseas are leading toward this consolidation of power that the Bible talks about, that like a G10 is going to come and a leader over the G10, a 10-group nation here, is going to control the world's economy, that we can actually see signs of this coming right now. Start us off.
Well, John, one of the things that's really interesting is that if you listen to the talk of from the government, you've been hearing people talk about this crisis and let's don't waste this crisis. Mm-hmm. Going back in history, philosophically, people have understood that a crisis can be useful to a tyrant. A crisis is the vehicle that would-be world rulers use to gain power. We've talked about that in Germany. You can go back through all of the major disruptive governments in history, and we're seeing some of that now. For instance, Greece may be the first in the long chain of European nations that could default on their obligations. There is a group of nations known humorously as the PIGS, P-I-I-G-S. It's an acrostic for Portugal, Ireland, Italy, Greece, and Spain. And then you look to Great Britain and their government, and they have a budget deficit of 11.6% of its GDP. And everywhere you look in Europe, and of course, we can't look too far because it's true in our own nation as well, we're finding all kinds of crises that demand some sort of solution. And in each of these political crises, the problem is created largely by growing dependence upon the government to take responsibility for its citizens' well-being.
Yeah, let's stop right there. I think we all know that in 2008, George Bush, at that time, said, we got a crisis, we've got to act, okay? Then President Obama came in and said, unless we come up with this almost $1 trillion worth of a bailout, we're in big trouble.
And so you have these crises that are coming, and what has happened is that the government is spending money, and the controls for that spending the money gets into fewer and fewer hands. But these crises control who gets this power. And it has not stopped. I mean, we're still in this problem that we have an economic crisis happening here and across the world, and there's still calls for more controls. Like what?
Well, you know, John, we were talking during the break about how once the government begins to provide something for its citizenry, it's almost impossible for it ever to be reversed. If you go back through all the entitlement programs, you know, everybody's talking about how they're going to reverse the health care program. Well, they're going to have a hard time doing that, mm-hmm. because once the people get used to something that they consider to be their privileged entitlement, they're not going to give it up. And what we're going to see as we go along is this is kind of like the frog in the kettle. The citizens focus on their own comfort, and they don't notice that more and more of their lives are being controlled by somebody else, and they don't seem to care very much as long as what they're getting continues to happen. You were talking about the extension of the program for unemployment.
Yeah, I think we have extended unemployment benefits to 2 years. You could be out of work for 2 years. Now, the question is, when we get to that barrier again, which we're going to get to pretty quick, and jobs aren't being created, how long are we going to extend that? And if you take them off of that, you have all of these people not getting money. They won't be paying their mortgages. They won't be able to get food. Mm-hmm. And the fact is, now you have a real crisis on your hand. Our nation also is facing, what are we going to do about these entitlement programs? In one of our previous programs, we talked about Social Security and Medicare obligations that become $1 trillion, or one-third of the federal budget.
Yeah. I remember, I think in the book there's a picture of an iceberg, and the iceberg shows the visible debt of 14 or 12 or whatever it is now, and then underneath that are all of the invisible entitlement programs like Social Security, Medicare, and the three systems of Medicare, and it totals up to somewhere in the neighborhood of $120 trillion.
In fact, David, let's talk about the three parts of Medicare that are unfunded and are coming up. They're due, and there's no money there.
The first is Part A, which takes care of hospital visits, and that's $36.7 trillion.
Unbelievable.
The second part, Part B, is for doctors, and that's $37 trillion. And then you have to add to that the part that was voted in during George W. Bush's rule, and that is for prescriptions, and that's $15.6 trillion.
Yeah, and if you add all of those up, you get to $89.3 trillion that's unfunded. If you add the unfunded liability of Social Security to it, then you're up to $106.8 trillion, mm-hmm. and you add that to the national debt, which they are talking about, is $14 trillion. The total unfunded liability, as you said, is $120.8 trillion,
and that amounts to a debt load that's easy to see when you say it's $383,000 per person, per citizen in the United States. And if you happen to be a family of four, it's $1.5 million for that group. And that's staggering.
Somewhere we're going to hit the fan here, David. Where's this going?
Well, you know what? What's interesting to me, John, is that what's happening right now is in direct violation of everything the founding fathers of this nation envisioned for our country. I don't think there's any doubt that we're moving away from the direction that was established early on. In fact, I read a very interesting quote from a guy by the name of David Walker, who said that in fiscal 2008, you could trace less than 40% of our federal government spending back to the responsibilities that were envisioned by our founders. In budget language, what that means is all of those original programs that were supposed to be handled by the federal government have now been replaced by entitlement programs, discretionary in the Constitution, and they're being absorbed into the things that people want instead of what the government was envisioned to do.
That would mean that 60% of what we're spending, according to the Constitution, we shouldn't be spending. And it would seem that big government is now an established fact right here in the United States, but you've got other proof that were violating this as well. Give us some of that.
One of the things that everybody will resonate with is this. You know, back in 1940, there were almost 15,000 banks in this nation, and today there are less than half that many, and they're becoming fewer and fewer. Banks are consolidating. In my city where I live, I had a bank that was named one thing one week, and the next week I looked in the paper and found out it had been absorbed by another bank, and I went to the bank. I didn't have to change ATM cards or anything. It took a little while for it to change over. I go to the same bank, but it's a totally different name. In actuality, according to the FDIC, in the first 117 days of 2010, 72 more banks were added to the list of failed institutions. So this is just another illustration, John, of what's happening with consolidation.
There's another evidence of going from consolidation to power in the hands of just a few, and this has to do with the stock market. In your book, you write about in early May 2010, the stock market experienced what is being called a flash crash. What was that all about?
John, what happened was that in about 1 hour, 1,000 points were lost on the Dow Index, and nobody seemed to know why it happened. In fact, there was hardly anything about it in the paper. No one talked about it. Come to find out, it was probably a trader error, a typing of a billion instead of a million in an order entry, causing computers to immediately begin automated selling.
And you've got, back in 1988, our good friend Ronald Reagan, who was the president at that time, created by executive order what has been referred to as the Plunge Protection Team. This is something I didn't know, David. Sometimes it's referred to by economists as the four dictators. This is right here in the United States. Mm-hmm. What in the world are the four dictators, this Plunge Protection Team, and it's actually been in action recently?
Well, actually, this the Plunge Protection Team was put into operation by Ronald Reagan, and he did it as a backstop against unexpected happenings in the stock market.
Yeah.
He started it, and it continued kind of below the radar screen through the presidents that followed him, and Obama brought it back to the top. And today, we have this Plunge Protection Team made up of four really powerful people, including Ben Bernanke, Timothy Geithner, Mary Shapiro, and Gary Gensler. And the committee functions under executive order, and it's to intercede when the stock market appears headed for a plunge. Now, note, John, these people aren't elected. They are all selected by the President of the United States, and they have ultimate power in that moment of crisis, and they determine whether it's a crisis or not.
How do they help a crisis or stop a crisis?
Well, they supposedly take action that would not be able to be taken without committee approval or without a long process. They step in and they make decisions immediately that help us supposedly not experience what we experienced in these recent months. But the issue is not so much whether it is a valuable or viable thing. The issue is that it has been taking the power that belongs in the Constitution and attributing that power to four people who have no check and balance and are able to manipulate the whole market by vote of four people.
This also brings up something fascinating that you put in the book, and that is that some people think that this group of people, with some of the big companies on Wall Street, actually are manipulating the stock market. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, you know, I'm not sophisticated enough in my analysis of all that to know whether that's true or not, but it certainly is being investigated, and people are writing about it, and it's a suspicion. And the reason it's a suspicion is because there seems to be no other answer to the volatile nature of what's happening in recent days.
All right, folks, we're talking about from crisis to consolidation, how economic crises lead to greater government control and the consolidation of power in the hands of just a few. We've just started talking about a few examples of what's happening right now. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about how the Bible talks about some of these things, and you will be amazed at what the Bible reveals of how this has happened in the past. And Joseph is the prime example. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
Yeah. You're listening to the John Ankerberg Show. If you would like to have today's show, Financial Signs of the End Times, with our special guest, Dr. David Jeremiah, it's available on audio CD. Just call our toll-free number at 1-800-805-3030 and request offer R107. Now, if you'd like to have all three television shows in this series, they are available as well on DVD. Just ask for offer R108. That number again is 1-800-805-3030. That's 1-800-805-3030.
All right, we're back. We're talking with Dr. David Jeremiah, and we're talking about the coming global economic Armageddon. And the fact is that the Bible has a lot to say about past experiences of how people have gotten into power, and because of an economic crisis, some like we're facing today, they have consolidated power, and it has not always been for the good of the people, all right? Talk about Joseph.
Well, you know, John, Joseph's one of my favorite people. He's one of the people in the Old Testament who's a type of Christ. He's one of the few people in the Bible about whom there is no evil report, and his story is well known. He came before the most powerful man in the world, the Pharaoh of Egypt. And Pharaoh had a dream. He didn't understand it. Joseph interpreted it for him. He told him that the dream meant they were going to have 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine. And then Joseph gave to Pharaoh a plan whereby if he managed this right, the people of Egypt would be survivors. And Pharaoh loved the plan so much that he put Joseph in charge of it. And basically what he said was, during the 7 years of plenty, you save up and you store the grain so that you have plenty in the years of famine. And when he laid this all out in front of Pharaoh, Pharaoh said, "That's great. It's a great idea. Now you manage it."
Yeah, and so he started in. And what he did was he took the harvest during that time and he took it freely from the people. He took how much?
20%.
20% of all they harvested, and they were making so much that I suppose they didn't care, I think. And he stored that up. And so now you hit the time of famine, and what did he do?
So what happened was the time of famine came and the people had no food, and they were instructed to go to Joseph, who was administrating the food store, and he took their money and gave them food. And so now what happened was he's got all of their money. He's consolidated their livelihood. Well, the government owned all the wealth in the land. Well, there was still a problem, and there still was not enough food. And so he came, this time the Egyptians came, and he says, "Well, I've got your money. If you want to keep eating, give me your livestock." So now he's got all their animals. He's got all their livestock. And, of course, back in those days, John, as you know, the whole economy was agricultural. So basically, he's got everything that means anything monetarily to them. But he's not finished because the famine's still not over. They now still don't have any food, and they come back to Joseph, and this time he takes their land. So now he's got their livelihood, he's got their livestock, and he's got their land. And the people were now servants of the state, totally dependent on Joseph to find new ways to let them purchase grain with their families. And then he finally relocated all the people. He put them in places where they were closer to the centers of where the food was, and he has now consolidated their location. He moves the people from their homes into the cities from one end of the border of Egypt to the other.
Yeah, and he still wasn't done.
No, he's still not done. He's got one more step that he's going to take in this consolidation, and now he consolidates their labor. He makes them feudal farmers, if you will. They are now working the land. He gives them back something for their work, but he owns the land and he controls the whole industry of Egypt.
Yeah, he says, "I'll tell you what, you guys can take 4/5, but we'll take a fifth."
Right.
Of the stuff that comes in the harvest. So, like you say, he owns all of their money. He takes that. He takes all of their cattle and their livelihood, basically. He takes themselves in terms of their land, and then he makes them work for the government.
Right.
And so they all survived, all right? Now, the question is, you know, Joseph is painted as a good guy.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem like. Was he a tyrant or
no,
was he a hero?
If we were telling his story in light of what we were talking about earlier, we would say he's a bad dude. He shouldn't have done that. But, of course, We have the tendency to look back into that situation and read all of our information. Let's just understand that he was doing this under the direction of God, so he was God's servant in this particular situation. And what is often lost is this wasn't really about Egypt. This was about Israel. This was about God's plan to keep Israel alive during a time of great famine. They were in the best land and they had the best food, but the story is about what Joseph did in the consolidation. So here's the deal. He did what he did under the direction of God, but even in doing that, he illustrates the challenges that happen when power is consolidated in one person.
Yeah, and we're seeing the scary part of this is we're starting to see this in our own country and also in other countries of the world, where because we have these economic crises, we're saying we need help. Who's giving it? The government. But the government is taking stuff from us in terms of taxes, and everybody's predicting we're going to have higher taxes. We still have to figure out what we're going to do with all of these entitlement programs because they'll bankrupt us as a country, so you got to do something, but you're going to have to take some money away from people that have been getting it.
Right.
So there's an illustration, and where is this going to lead?
Well, let me tell you the rest. In the words of Paul Harvey, let me tell you the rest of the story. When you open your Bibles to the first chapters of Exodus, you get the rest of the story where it says, "And there arose a new generation that knew not Joseph." And what happened was when Joseph passed off the scene, what took place was the people of Israel became the slaves of Egypt and they were in bondage to that nation for 400 years. John, let me tell you something. Consolidation may have an immediate response that's good, but the long-term perspective of consolidation under a few people is a very dire situation, and we are headed that way as a nation today.
All right, David, what do you want people to take away from this program today? What do we learn from Joseph?
I think Joseph teaches us the danger of sacrificing tomorrow on the altar of today. What happened was they took care of the immediate problem, but they created a problem that was far more serious going into the future. I don't know how to put that together with the sovereignty of God. I'm just looking at it through my human eyes. That's what I see. And then the second thing, we've been talking about this pretty consistently during these programs, and that is the problem of submitting the good of many to the control of one. We can go through history and give illustration after illustration of what happens with totalitarian government. And as we see our nation, little by little, putting the power of the nation in the hands of fewer and fewer people who make more and more of the decisions, we should be on our knees before God and ask Him, where do we go to stop this movement toward a government that is not in keeping with the founding fathers of our nation?
Yeah, I think we ought to be involved to the extent that we can be involved to stop some of this. And it means accepting hard decisions that our nation's going to have to make, mm-hmm. or we're going to be bankrupt as a nation.
Right.
Now, next week we're going to continue, and we're going to talk about the mark of the beast. And we're going to talk about the technology that is available today. You've got a ton of things that people need to hear that has to do with this new technology that could fulfill some of the prophetic statements made in the Bible. We're going to talk about this special chip or a mark that's affixed to the hand or the forehead of every individual on earth, how close we are to that. Folks, you will not believe what Dave's going to present to you that's already on the market, that's being tested, used, and is in favor in many, many big companies in our country. So stick with us. We're going to talk about the mark of the beast next week.
You're listening to The John Ankerberg Show. If you would like to have today's show, Financial Signs of the End Times, with our special guest, Dr. David Jeremiah, it's available on audio CD. Just call our toll-free number at 1-800-805-3030 and request offer R107. Now, if you'd like to have all three television shows in this series, they are available as well on DVD. Just ask for offer R108. That number again is 1-800-805-3030. That's 1-800-805-3030.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of The John Ankerberg Show. For more information, please contact us at 1-800-805-3030 or go online at www.johnankerberg.org right now.